Welcome to the UDIA Queensland's Development DROM podcast, where we speak to members and ask them to share some property industry insights and at the same time get to know our industry colleagues a little better. My guest today is Amanda Yates, the CEO of Sun Central. Amanda has extensive experience in leadership of major public infrastructure programs. Prior to her role as CEO with Sun Central, she was the Deputy Director General, Department of Transport and Main Roads, where she oversaw the state's $27 billion transport infrastructure program. Amanda is a Fellow of the Institute of Engineers Australia, a registered professional engineer, and Chair of the Australian Institute of Company Directors Sunshine Coast Committee. Amanda holds a board director role with PowerLink and Wishlist, the Sunshine Coast Health Foundation. Thanks for joining us on the Development DROM, Amanda. Now, Amanda, your career has spanned multiple roles in state government, including 4 years as the Deputy Director General in the Department of Transport and Main Roads. What's motivated you to spend such a large portion of your career to date in government?
Well, it's interesting because I never intended to stay with Transport and Main Roads as long as I did. So I was there for 12 years. And what motivated me to apply for a role there was I'd actually applied for a role in the private sector.
Okay.
And they had said to me that I had really good project experience, but where I needed to expand my capabilities was in that sort of big programs of work.
Okay.
And I said to them, well, how do I get that if I am not working in that area? And they said, well, go and look at one of the government-owned corporations or Transport and Main Roads because they've got a big program of work. And given I had started my career in transport and transport planning, I went, oh, well, that sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
So my plan was to stay with TMR for 2 years.
Right.
And I think once I got in there, what I realised was I've got this really strong passion for economic development and particularly economic development in regional areas. Like a lot of the planning work that I've done, you see a lot of areas that do have socioeconomic issues that can be greatly improved if they're connected well.
Okay.
And so I think once I got into TMR, I realized there was this huge opportunity to be part of the solutions, the connecting Queensland solutions that would actually have this really, really significant economic impact, but also just impact on the social vibrancy of lots of communities across Queensland.
Yeah. And it's interesting you say that because often we would speak to people or the perception would be that things move slowly in any level of government and it can be a slog to see the conversion of something that appears in a plan or a budget line item to actually delivery. But you obviously enjoyed that process and the importance of that process sounds like it really hit home.
Well, when I first started with TMR, certainly what I had experienced prior to that, so transport infrastructure can either be an enabler or an inhibitor in terms of economic development. So if the infrastructure is there, it really enables the economic activity.
Absolutely.
If it's not there, it can completely stop multi-million or multi-billion dollar projects that would have huge positive impacts on communities.
Yeah.
And I think my previous interaction prior to joining Transport and Main Roads, I had probably hit the same sort of brick walls that others would have hit. And, you know, I had some really frustrating dealings. What I found when I got in there was there's sort of two schools of thought. And one was that we only had one job in TMR and that was the safety and the efficiency of the network.
Yes.
Now, we absolutely never want to compromise safety.
No.
The interesting thing about efficiency of a network, though, is if you keep people off a network, it's really efficient.
Yes.
And so, you know, some people within there, I think that context had, that was their interpretation of what efficient was.
Yes.
But there are a whole group of people who work in TMR who absolutely want to enable the right outcomes for communities. And so I think being able to harness those people and those skills and actually lift them up so that they became part of the solutions that we were delivering was really fun.
Yeah, I imagine it would be. Now, obviously moved to a very different role, but slightly similar now that you put it in that context with Sun Central. What excites you when you get up in the morning? What excites you about the day ahead and your role?
So as you mentioned, I'd had quite a long career with state government and the move out of state government was quite deliberate on my part. I just had this niggling thing in the back of my mind that I wanted to broaden my own experiential base. And as I said before, my move into TMR was about trying to make that move and broaden my experiences, you know, way back and then in 2010. And it was just that the opportunities were so good in TMR that I just stayed quite a bit longer than I thought I would.
Yeah.
When I was ready to move out of the state, I started looking and I started to think about, well, what is the value add that I've got? And I think one of the things that I have found I am very good at is delivering client-side delivery of large programs of infrastructure work. And so when I started thinking about leaving the state government, and this was quite interesting because I didn't apply for the role that I now have, I went and spoke to a recruiter who I knew really well and knew that I was thinking about making a move out of the state. And she had very sensibly said to me, when you're actually ready to go, give me a ring, but be very, very clear about what you're looking for.
Yes, okay.
And so I rang her and said, okay, I'm ready to make the move. What I'm looking for is to stay in client-side infrastructure delivery, mm-hmm. and I want to report to a board and I want to manage a P&L.
Yeah.
And it was quite interesting because she said to me, oh, well, you live on the Sunshine Coast, don't you? And I launched into my, it's okay, I live on the Sunshine Coast. I know there isn't that sort of role there. It's fine. I've commuted for 7 years. I can continue to commute. I even said to her, I've thought a lot about this. I'm happy to work in Brisbane. I'm even happy to work in Sydney. So I'd given her a list and she went, hang on, can you just take a breath?
Yeah.
I think I've got a role for you on the Sunshine Coast.
Oh,
and
fantastic.
I went, what?
I don't need to buy the chopper.
I don't need to buy a chopper.
Yeah.
No, exactly. And so I think to move to Sun Central and to be able to have oversight of the largest greenfield CBD development in the country, that's a bit of a once in a lifetime thing for a person like me with the background and skills that I've got.
Yeah.
And it was almost one of those things where it was, oh, I can't not be involved with this. It's just so exciting.
Yeah. So that in and of itself is enough to get you out of bed every day,
totally.
Amanda?
Yes. And look, we've got some exciting things coming up. We've had our master plan redesign approved, so we are ready to go with a revitalised master plan that is going to really future-proof for the community, not just Maroochydore, but of the whole of the Sunshine Coast
Absolutely.
And Southeast Queensland, really. So we've got a lot of work to do. Our development will continue through until 2039 at this stage.
Wow.
So it's a very, very long term and a very large development that we're working on.
Yeah. And the current challenges, Amanda, that industry is reporting around construction, infrastructure delivery, construction costs, skills and trades, Sunshine Coast is not immune from those. What sort of impact does some of those challenges have on Sun Central and timeframes?
Well, obviously, the construction and that sort of continuous development that we want to see that will make sure that we're able to realise the outcomes that we want in the timeframe that we want does actually require us to be continuously building.
Yeah.
And to make those things come out of the ground, they've got to be commercially viable.
Yes.
And the commercial viability at the moment is really challenged. Mm-hmm. If I look on the Sunshine Coast, so at the moment we've got two commercial buildings coming out of the ground. They're both about 10,000 square metres.
Okay.
One is the Barwon Private Hospital.
Yes, of course.
And the other one is Walker is building their commercial offering at 51st Avenue.
Yep.
Both at about 10,000 square metres, as I said.
Mm-hmm.
If I look at the last time a commercial building of equivalent size was built on the Sunshine Coast, there was one built in 2016, the Yui building.
Yes.
And then there was one built in 2017, Kentucky. And so even prior to COVID, the conditions really have not been such that we're getting that real continuous development happening.
Yeah.
So what we're starting to see is premium office space on the Sunshine Coast is at a premium. The vacancy rates are 0%
Amazing.
At the moment.
Yeah.
So any A-grade commercial offering that is available is being snapped up really, really quickly. So it's almost like the demand is there.
Yes.
And what we're really trying to reconcile is how do we actually make the commercials work? And it's still quite challenging. It's easing off and getting better, but it's still very challenging.
And I imagine part of the strength of a development like Sun Central is the ability to be flexible and adaptable to industry conditions, isn't it? You know, you might have to, I hate to use the word, but pivot to another type of or another sector of built form until there is some recovery or stabilisation in construction costs.
Absolutely, yes. So, you know, we are looking at all sorts of different offerings. And again, because the city centre is so large, it is 53 hectares, if there are other forms that potentially are more viable in the current context, then the advantage of what we got is we can bring those forward.
Yeah.
It's just actually sort of trying to find what is the most viable and what will work for the market for right now.
Yeah. Good work on using the word pivot. So well done.
I know. Yeah. You got it in there.
That's right.
Good.
I win bingo today. Now, in your role at TMR, you managed a team, LinkedIn tells me, of over 3,500 people. going back to your days in TMR, what strategies did you put in place to remain connected to that team and build that culture of service delivery and customer service?
Do you know, it is quite funny because when you've got a team that large, you obviously have an organisational structure where there's lots of people reporting to lots of people. And so your direct reports are still not large.
Yes.
So you still have a team of 10 or less generally who report to you. And I think having direct reports of more than that sort of number becomes almost, it's not unmanageable, but it's incredibly difficult to manage that. And so what you end up with is you have to work really hard making sure that the values and the culture that you want to have in your organisation really connect with the people. One of the things that worked really well for me was I am a storyteller. And so pre-COVID, I used to send out all these little newsletters. So you'd send out the newsletter to 3,500 people. And I found if I told a story, and look, the stories were mostly about the fact that I had all of these balls in the air and I wasn't necessarily juggling them well.
Yes.
And people kind of enjoy stories about the fact that you're human, the fact that
human element of it,
you know, what drives you, what's important to you, what are your values and how do you want to bring those to the culture?
Yep.
So I think that remaining connected in a way that is authentic to me was really important to me.
Yeah.
One of the funny things about my use of LinkedIn is, because I mean, lots of people have said to me, oh, we really like seeing your stories on LinkedIn. I didn't do that pre-COVID. It was one of those things that I had done internally a lot to remain connected to the staff and to really sort of feel that people understood me. And then because we were also remote, it just became one of those things where somebody internally, Rebecca Boone was her name, and she worked really closely with me in comms and engagement. And she just said, look, I just think there might be a broader audience for this. And this might be a really good way for us to connect with our partners and make sure that we remain connected. So I think that storytelling has always really worked well for me. And it's been a big thing, even in terms of changing the culture. You know, we talked before about when I first went to TMR, there was this sort of big thing around the safety and efficiency of the network. To move the thinking from that's not our only remit to we really are about the social and economic vibrancy of communities. All of that is about the culture. Like you can't actually make those sorts of big step changes in the way that you think and the way you position the business if you haven't got the people behind you.
Yeah. And how do you get the balance right, Amanda, on social media? We've seen it go really well and we've seen it go, and I think there are examples too where you don't get the balance right and you overstep the mark really easily. How do you define that line of what's good to share, how often, to who? You have a great matrix in the office that you consult magic eight ball
no great matrix. I think I have some spectacular examples of doing it really badly. And I think the only thing that I would say is that I try to remain true to myself.
Yeah, okay. And you learn from that, do you?
Totally.
Yes.
Yeah, totally. I think I don't really use social media platforms other than LinkedIn, or I certainly use LinkedIn the most.
You're not on the TikTok?
I'm definitely not on the TikTok.
Me
I mean, in the future, you
maybe
never know.
Leave
you
that
never
door
know.
Open.
That's right.
Okay.
But
you
I
heard
think,
it here first. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. If you ever see me sort of doing a TikTok
that's
dance,
right.
then you go, I know where that came
from.
I think because LinkedIn is more a professional platform, it's just one I think that has worked better for me.
Yes.
Okay. And I think getting it right is about making sure that you understand what are the things that you are important to you and that you actually want to talk about.
Yeah.
So, and then what I do find is if you are willing to talk about stuff that's important to you in a professional context, that's also the opportunity. People will come in to hear about those things. And then once they are there, they will look at technical content.
Yes. Okay.
And, you know, what I would see is if I sort of shared a story about myself and the fact, I mean, I shared one a couple of years ago now where I said, I don't think it's work-life balance. I think it's work-life integration. Like you've got to bring your whole self to work. Otherwise, you're not bringing the best every day. And that means you recognize that there's other stuff going on in your life. Yep. And so many people interacted with that post because it meant something to them.
Yeah.
And then what I found is I would have technical posts where you get 200 or 300 interactions. And suddenly, because people were interacting with me as a human being, not just as the leader that I was, they would also then interact with the technical posts.
Yes,
and so I think there was a really strong connection into that.
Yeah.
But look, I have had some pretty horrible and brutal feedback publicly and privately on social media.
Yeah.
I think I do get the sense that maybe women are subjected to that a bit more regularly, yeah. which is not right. But I think the thing that I absolutely will continue to do is I just won't be scared off.
Yes.
I think, yes. you know, if what I am sharing is helpful and useful to a broader community and the things that are important to me, you know, women in leadership roles and women in technical roles and having women have a greater presence in our industry, then I think it's really important to continue to share that.
And stick to your guns.
Yeah.
What advice would you give to a younger Amanda who is just setting off on her professional career? I mean, a younger Amanda is still in front of me, but...
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Okay. That's very good. Yeah, it's very good. Yeah. What advice would I give? I think... there's something around the second guessing bit. Yes. I know everyone says imposter syndrome, but for me, it's self-sabotaging.
Okay.
So the number of points in my career where I've gone, I'm not going to do that because I'm not going to succeed at that anyway.
Okay.
So I think the advice I would give my younger self is to make sure that I did whatever I could to keep my confidence level in the place where it needed to be.
Yep.
To work out ways of having people around me that could knock me off the self-sabotaging path.
Yes, okay.
Because that's where I found it's been successful. Like when people call you on your own behaviour, so if you've got those people around you who are supporting you, and it is mentors, but sometimes it's champions.
Yes.
There's a whole range of different people who support everybody through their careers. And I think I would say that I would probably suggest making sure that I had those people around me much earlier than what I did. It took me a long time to realise that that was important. And I think, yeah, that would be certainly something that I would make sure that I told my younger self. I think one of the things that I've spent a lot of time recently talking to younger women, particularly in technical professions, about is also just that strong need to have the business acumen, strategic acumen, and financial acumen. And I think oftentimes women are not necessarily given the same opportunities to get the exposure to those really big elements. And being a good leader and bringing out the greatness in others, all of those things are really, really important. But the thing that gets you to the door of leadership opportunities is making sure that you've got that business, strategic and financial acumen.
Yep.
And I think it took me a little bit longer to work that out. And I saw a podcast many years ago, and a lady was saying this is the career advice that women normally don't get. And she was talking about that missing 33%. And I think she's really onto something there.
Yes. And I think too, apart from anything else, it also adds colour to the technical work that you're completing too, doesn't it?
Yes.
It informs that bigger picture about why this particular project or this particular design is or isn't going to stack.
The number of times that I have been involved in consultation processes for projects that we have worked on for long, long periods of time, and we will go out to the community and say, oh, hello, we're here, we're just here to show you the solution that we're delivering. Mm. And the community, the community says, well, we don't like that.
No.
And we go, oh, that's a pity because we actually know we're right.
Yes.
And eventually you'll know we're right. Yes. And so therefore, thanks very much for your feedback, but this is what we're going to deliver.
Yep.
And I think having those other things in your kit bag means that you understand the importance of there might be the right technical solution.
Yes.
And then you have to overlay the social, the economic, the environmental and the political.
Mm.
And the solution that you will end up delivering rarely looks like the right technical solution that you started with.
Yes.
And sometimes what that means is you've got to start involving communities and stakeholders at the problem definition stage. Yeah. So instead of just going out and saying, we've found a solution, you've got to say, hey guys, we believe there's a problem here that we have to solve. Mm-hmm. You live here, you live and work in this community. What are you seeing?
Yes.
And I think that different approach, in my experience, has always led to better outcomes.
Yeah, absolutely. What's been the most challenging and the most rewarding aspects of your career to date, apart from this podcast in the rewarding
Well, this
bit.
Is the pinnacle,
yeah,
obviously. Yes.
Yeah.
I think what I just talked about before about actually getting the recognition that the right technical solution isn't necessarily the only solution and the solution that you will deliver. I have had many, many really, really terrible experiences where I have had infrastructure solutions that I've taken to the community. They've been accepted very, very poorly.
Yes.
And then I've had to regroup. Now, when you walk into one of those rooms with an angry mob and they're booing you, and I've been booed on more than one occasion, I've been threatened, I've had to have a police escort into one particular session. And look, I totally understand that the passion and the anger that you see within communities because they feel like they're not being heard.
Yeah.
I think those have been the most challenging for me. They're also the most rewarding though, because when you can get to the point where you say, okay, we need to step back. We've got to regroup on this.
Yes.
We need to get a solution that is going to actually solve the problem we're trying to solve and is acceptable to the community. And when I say acceptable, not everyone's going to love everything.
No, because it's change.
And I always call it the 25% rule because communities do not, they're normally very accepting of the fact that if they ask for something, they don't always get 100% of it. Yes. They just want to be heard and they want to see that their feedback is being considered in a really meaningful way. Mm. And sometimes that means they get 25% of what they ask for, but they were listened to. And there's many, many examples of that. Communities are actually not unreasonable normally. I think in any engagement that I've had, though, in a community context, I would always say, just remember that the people who are standing up there at the front that you're yelling at are human beings. Mm. And I think if we could actually bring back a little bit more respect in those interactions, we would probably get some much better outcomes. So I'd love to see a reset in some of those things, because there has increasingly in the last several years, there has been this sense that the technical people standing in front of you can be abused.
Yes.
And I just don't like that at all. I think it gets everybody into the wrong place. We all back into our corners and we lose that ability to get the right outcomes.
And you think it's getting worse? Do you think that that's, do you think that's a reflection of where society's at more generally? The what's, you know, we often talk about the what's in it for me and how will this affect me and how will this affect my ability to climb the ladder into the, and find the next, move into the next property or make my next career move. We see it in focus groups a lot. Immediately when you talk about some element of change, people take it immediately, quite naturally, back to themselves. But then it quite inspires quite a defensive response. And I imagine that that is increasingly what's playing out in some of those situations.
I think so. And I think what I've seen is it is getting worse.
Yeah.
And I see particularly community consultation processes now, there is just, the ground rules are not set anymore to say, look, there's a basic requirement here to have a respectful discussion. I think the other thing that I see is a lot of stakeholders now, particularly stakeholders who are not happy with solutions that are being proposed, will ask for an evidence base.
Yes.
And then oftentimes the evidence base will be supplied and the response of the stakeholder will be, oh, that's just all bullshit. And you kind of go, well, I don't know what I can do. You've asked me for an evidence base and I'm giving you data. And a lot of the data is irrefutable.
Yeah.
Like, it's data. I didn't make it up.
No.
But if the community then says, well, it doesn't matter, like if they just completely dismiss it out of hand, whereas if they went, okay, well, I acknowledge that, that's our starting point. Now, what needs to happen for us to get to a place where we can resolve some of these other matters which are of concern?
Yes.
And you know, I had a conversation with somebody the other day who was telling me that she had to move because the place she was living was just far too busy. And I went, oh, okay, well, that's terrible. And she said, oh, I woke up one day and I was making a cup of tea and I looked over and I saw that there was units being developed across the road from me and I was outraged. And she said, I should have been consulted. And I said, well, were they not in accordance with the planning scheme? She said, no, they were. That's what council told me. It was all in accordance with the planning scheme. And I went, okay, so what were you outraged about?
Yeah.
And I said, oh, do you live in a house? And she said, no, I live in units.
Yeah.
I said, oh, hang on a minute. Let me get this straight. You live in units and then you were angry because somebody else was building units. And you kind of go, I don't know, like we have to have a little bit of perspective on this.
Yeah.
And I do think it's important for people like me who are working client side to be willing to engage with communities and be willing to engage with stakeholders and be willing to have the robust conversations.
Mm.
I just think if we keep the respect in those conversations, that the outcomes will be a lot better.
Yes, the operative word is engage, isn't it, rather than argue.
Yes.
If we can just get to that, that would be great.
Yes.
As a starting point.
Totally. And I think the commitment, again, client-side commitment needs to be, we're not just going to come to you with the answer and pretend that this is a meaningful consultation.
Yeah. Now, Amanda, as a leader and a busy one, how do you continue to prioritise your own personal and professional development?
So there's a range of things that I have been doing in that space. I think a lot of the big professional, particularly the consulting organisations, do a whole lot of fantastic seminar work now. So they get their own thought leaders And they're now, and this is sort of more happening since COVID because it all used to be face-to-face, whereas people have pivoted to quite a lot of online learning. So there are a lot of things now where I will sort of go, okay, well, there's a great placemaking forum. I'm just going to go to that. It's an hour out of my day. And I can listen to people who I would never get the opportunity to interact with. And you sort of think there's things that I now get exposure to that really continue to lift my thinking. Yes. You know, it's that eyes up thing.
Yes.
So I do quite a lot of that.
It's a good Nepal reference, Amanda.
Oh, eyes up. Thank you. Eyes up. Did
well
you
done.
Like that?
I did, yeah.
Mm, thank you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, look, I think that there's just enormous opportunities like that. I think the other thing that I always like to do is I like to have people who are smarter than me. You know, you surround yourself by smarter people, it makes you look good.
Yep.
And those people...
But it challenges you
totally
as well.
Challenge my thinking.
Yep.
And I think if I get to the point where everyone just agrees with me and says, actually, you're right, it's time for me to get a new job.
Yes. Yeah, a bit boring, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So there's a whole range of those sorts of things. I do try to make sure that I continue to do a lot of reading. And yes. I mean, podcasts are just my favourite thing in the whole world.
Yes.
You know, sometimes when I am looking at a challenging situation, you can always find material that you can just listen to in the car.
Yes.
That makes you think about things differently. And I think that's the thing for me. My professional development now is about making sure that I don't become complacent about being the person who has the right answer.
Yeah. And are you finding that it is a journey? You're continually having to adapt, revisit, have a look at your own style for this particular situation. It is very much a moving feast, isn't it?
Completely. And I think that happens a lot in a more public context. So if I've got to go and deliver information to stakeholder groups or I go and do a presentation somewhere, it's the times when it goes badly, I end up thinking, okay, well, now I need to work out how I can reposition so that I can do that better next time. And last year I went and did the Chief Executive Women course and we did a whole session around gravitas in presenting. And I mean, honestly, there was just stuff there that I had never even thought of. And now, again, that's become part of my reset in terms of my leadership journey moving forward. So I think it's really important to make sure that leaders do continue to work on themselves. It's really easy. I've fallen into this trap of supporting everybody else on their own professional development journeys and then forgetting that that's equally as important for the leader as well.
Yeah. And just doing the things too.
Yeah.
Now, thinking ahead to the rest of the year, what's your professional and personal focus?
So professionally, obviously, I mentioned before that we have had our master plan redesign approved. So we have got some pretty significant bulk earthworks that we now have to go and plan and get started on. So we're about 25% through our development at this stage. And a big focus for us for the next couple of years is going to be those bulk earthworks to make sure that we can get to the point that by 2032, which I know is about the Olympics and the Paralympic Games, for us it's really a bit of a placeholder to say we've got to have the city centre to a point where people can interact with it and where it's a beautiful city, not a construction site.
Yes.
So we're sort of on the 8-year countdown to make sure that we can get to that. So we've got a lot of planning and preparation to do for that. We are also a transit-oriented development, obviously. So our whole city is designed quite deliberately to prioritise active transport and public transport.
Yes.
So we'll be working really closely with government to make sure that we can get the right transport solutions. So there's a whole range of work that we will be doing there. I think on a personal level, I have tried more recently to prioritise just making sure that I'm getting up and starting the day by moving.
Yes.
So that means I have to get up an hour earlier and that's going to get harder and harder
in
winter.
It is as it gets darker and
totally.
Darker.
But I just find if I'm doing that, I'm much more level, much more even-tempered. I can deal with a whole range of things. I don't get as tired. So even though I'm getting up earlier,
it's
I just think
strange,
it's,
isn't it?
You know, it is really strange. People say you've got to move and you've got to look after your mental health and you think, oh, it's amazing when you actually do that and you can see the connection. So, yeah, I get up and we got a dog. We got a puppy.
Oh, fantastic.
So,
great. What?
It's a Labradoodle because everyone has oodles now.
Yes, you have to.
Yes. So we have a Labradoodle who it's quite good because on those days when I go, it's raining, I'm not going. I've got this dog there going, we're definitely going.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
it's
we
a whole
do.
Lot of my day.
Yeah. 3 or 4 Ks a day. That's how I start my day every day. And that's what I intend to try and focus on
Fantastic.
To the end of the year.
Oh, well, how exciting. I'm excited to watch the progress of the Labradoodle. How old?
18 months now.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Is your 18-month-old puppy still chewing things like my 18-month-old puppy is?
Everything. We had outdoor furniture. Did you hear I said had?
Yes, we had outdoor furniture too. Hmm.
The puppy, it didn't just chew the furniture, it ingested the furniture. Yeah. So it no longer exists. There's great holes in the furniture. No, we still quite like the dog. She's just got this lovely face where she goes, I know I just ate all your furniture, but look at me, I'm lovely.
And I'm really sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I promise I will do it again, but still.
But for right now, I'm quite sorry.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Amanda, thank you so much. It's been wonderful to have you on the Development Drama. You've been very generous with your time and your thoughts and insights. So it's been wonderful to chat to you.
Thank you. I've really enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening to the UDIA Queensland's Development Drama podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure having you with us. Remember to rate and review this show on your favourite podcast app. While you're there, please make sure you click subscribe so you don't miss an episode.